the 14th. Happy VD, everybody. Happy VD. No, that would be Valentine's Day Day. You just say Happy VD, and then that says it all. Okay. How are we doing? Not bad. Still up a couple of percent, not quite, but Apple is snaking back to where we bought it. Lockheed Martin is still hurting because of the upcoming sequestration for Defense Department. We'll see if that happens. But look at Procter & Gamble. Yay, and Toyota's not doing too bad either.
Are we supposed to be looking up with the sheet?
It's up to you. If you want to change, you know, it's been a few weeks now. Does anybody want to change anything? Sell something, buy something else? I'm with you. I'm with you. Although, I don't know about Lockheed Martin. I don't know. Short term might be dangerous.
Yeah, they'll find a war.
Yeah, we'll find a war. It's not funny, McGee. Okay, we started here, and we'll review quickly. But first, I want to remind everybody that the mutual fund assignment is due next Thursday. If you're having troubles finding data, contact me. We'll help you with that. And we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Notice that the parking lot is a whole lot more empty than it used to be. After the first exam, these people. I know, it's college. What can I say? We can't just push people along. Anybody, who's got a good joke? Did I tell you about the alligator?
Yeah.
And the bear, and the mushroom, and the... Did I tell you about the duck?
No.
No, see, I didn't tell you about the duck. This duck walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? And orders a beer. And the bartender says, sure. You want me to put it on your bill? See, he's a duck, right? Do you want me to put the beer on your bill? Your duck bill or bar bill? Get it? Yeah, okay, good. I know. I tell you. I warn you that they get worse, and you don't believe me. You just don't believe me. They get worse. Okay, so now we discussed the primary market and spent a lot of time on why companies should go public. But now we're going to discuss... And the place where you and I will mostly be doing our buying and selling, and that is the secondary market. In securities, stocks, bonds, whatever, that have already been issued. And we discussed that there was a distinction for decades between the organized, centralized exchanges and the over-the-counter market. But the truth is now, folks, that these distinctions are basically gone because of technology. So let's talk about historically. All trading for the exchanges was conducted on the exchange floor. There were people screaming and hollering and yelling at one another. We're going to see some videos of that. Instead of the one seller, multiple buyer that you see in the state or farm auction, there were multiple sellers and multiple buyers. Brokers on the floor were calling out prices and quantities and yelling at one another. But now, due to technology and the sheer massive volume of shares that are traded every day, things have changed. Most all the trading is now conducted electronically. Some large trades still involve significant human interaction, but they're far less than 0.1%. There's very, very little bit is being done by humans talking to one another. It's all electronic. This is where we ended, right?
Yeah?
Okay, good. Now, who was the... Who was the granddaddy of them all on the exchanges? The New York Stock Exchange. You'll see it written as NYSE, and people will say NYSE, or they'll actually spell it out NYSC. It used to be, people still call it the Big Board. The Big Board. Responsible for over 90% of the volume of transactions on the exchanges. It used to be a private organization. You had to be a member to actually trade, and they were called SEATs, Stock Exchange Auction Trading Systems. But it's no longer a private organization anymore. It's now a public entity. It's now a corporation that you and I can buy shares in. And the SEATs were phased out, and now it's a free-for-all. Companies on the New York Stock Exchange must meet stringent requirements. And traditionally, these were the largest the most prestigious companies. Once you hit the big leagues as a company, you wanted to go on the New York Stock Exchange. And if you fell from grace, Kmart, Kodak, you were delisted. We don't want you anymore. You no longer fulfill our stringent requirements. You understand? This is where bona fide... You know, I use that word a lot. And I'm not sure everybody understands what I'm talking about. You know what bona fide means? I'm sorry? Real. Yeah, certified. Real, you know. Not a fake. A serious company that's in business, out there making money, because there are thousands of unbonafide, not real companies that are just somebody's garage in Idaho somewhere. It's a phony. So this was the granddaddy of them all. Started in 1792, when Wall Street was a wall on the outskirts of the city. Big changes at the New York Stock Exchange. In 2005, they purchased the Archipelago Electronic Exchange and the Pacific Regional Exchange. What are those? Later. They became a publicly traded corporation in March of 2006, no longer a private partnership, merged with Euronext, based in Paris, phasing out the face-to-face double auction trading in favor of exclusively trading electronically. They still got the floor open, and you still see videos of people there, but the only people there are people being interviewed. There's no trading going on. There might be one or two people talking to one another. And in 2011, Germany's stock market in Frankfurt, that's their big financial center, tried to purchase the New York Stock Exchange, the Börse. I can't say it. Börse? Can you say that? Anybody German? Speak German? Börse. B-O-E-R-S-E, the Börse. They tried to buy the New York Stock Exchange, and there was a bit of a brouhaha. How could those sneaky Germans buy our stock market? Well, it's a publicly traded corporation. Anybody owns 50% plus one shares, they own it. And it wasn't the United States regulators, it was the European regulators that said, no, you'll be too big, you can't do that.
So the New York Stock Exchange is its own company?
Now it's a corporation. It used to be a private member-only partnership.
So instead of investing like McDonald's or Walmart?
You can buy shares in the New York Stock Exchange. I'm sorry?
You can buy anybody?
Yeah, any investor can buy shares in the New York Stock Exchange.
And that's different from Walmart and
McDonald's. Right. This is a different corporation. It's the company. It's the corporation that facilitates trades of shares of the biggest and the most traditionally the biggest and largest companies in the world.
So wouldn't that be better than Walmart or
Coke? I don't know. What do you think the... hang on a minute. Hang on. Good question. Hang on a minute. Let's hang on to that question. Okay. So now what's happening... The New York Stock Exchange is now in the process of being acquired for $8 billion, which is a whole lot less than Walmart or Coke or McDonald's are worth, by a 12-year-old derivative company based in Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't want that.
A 12-year-old company that makes their money trading derivatives is buying the venerable New York Stock Exchange. Well, it's a different world, right? What will it mean for investors and for trading? Well, it is difficult to know if the average investor will be able to notice any big differences soon, but the oft-mentioned, oft-discussed ultimate goal is to have 24-hour non-stop electronic trading. Turn them off. Take out the batteries. What do you think of this possibility? It's 2 a.m. in the morning and you want to sell your shares of Coca-Cola. No, they're not on the floor anymore. They're in front, right, they're sitting there in front of the terminals. And you look at 3 a.m. in the morning and say, I want to buy me some Nike.
Something in Japan.
I don't know. What do you think of it? Yeah.
Won't the stocks be more erratic then?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's not as many people awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, are there? Well, there's people somewhere in the other part of the world that are up. You know, they're on the other side of the world. How come they don't fall off? I think I'm figured that one out.
Yeah.
You know?
Forex
now, you know, what is a Forex trading? Okay, this is foreign exchanges of currencies. And we'll get into that much later on. But you're right. It's going to be more of a trading world. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I hope it doesn't happen. Personally, I'm not in charge of the darn thing. But I think, you know, let's go home and have dinner and be with our kids and our family. Yeah, that's up to you. That's right. It's what is chuckling to know.
So this is happening now?
This is what's happening right now. The New York Stock Exchange is in the process of being acquired by a 12-year-old company based in Atlanta that sells and buys and sells derivatives. I mean, the folks from the 1950s, 60s, if they woke up, they were dead now. But if they woke up now and realized what was going on, they'd go, well, how come this happens? Hang on a minute. The floor brokers, the house brokers, we're going to see a little video of them yelling and screaming at one another. They execute orders on behalf of the firm's customers and occasionally on behalf of the firm themselves, their own account. The independent brokers are those people who provide as-needed execution services to house brokers, members, and non-member broker-dealers. They are independent of a particular firm, and they used to be called the $2 brokers because they charge you $2 to make a trade. The floor brokers are very worried about the New York Stock Exchange's aggressive moves to all electronic trading. They believe it means the end of their way of life. Well, folks, it's not really the end. It's just a big change from face-to-face interaction to sitting in front of a terminal all day. Does this sound familiar to any of you? What's going on right now in education? The online classes fill up like that, folks. The students grab the online classes like that, and then they drop like flies when they realize they have to work. When they realize I keep sending them emails, they don't send me anything back, and I just go, look, I got to drop you. If you don't show, if you don't respond, I have to drop you. And you drop them, and then they just never hear from them. Maybe once in a while, maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, you get, why did you drop me? You can't read your damn emails. But this is what's going on in education now, isn't it? We're moving. I don't like it. Doesn't mean you have to like it. I hate it. I love being in the classroom. I can see your faces. I can see you go like this. Or go, okay. But you online, I don't know what's going on. I don't even know what you look like. You understand? That's the part. I don't really, like, hey, I got to change. I got to serve the students. So have you checked out my website, folks? Some of you? Yes, thank you. Wonder Woman, Wonder Bread, Wonder Professor. And the reason I did that is because people would go, they couldn't spell my last name. Our individual website, so the college website /tilde, and then your first initial and your last name. Well, first of all, they can't find the tilde key, the squiggle. And then they can't, Paiano, they don't know what the hell that is. So we're doing it. Education's going that way. And the specialists, we'll see some specialists. These are stock exchange members who specialize in making transactions in one or more stocks. These people are the broker-dealers we will see when we get to the next world, the NASDAQ. The job of the specialist was, we should turn it into past tense because we're going away, is to manage the auction process. The specialist buys or sells the stock from their own inventory to provide a continuous, fair, and orderly market. So in other words, you have brokers on either side buying and selling, and when something goes wrong, they have to step in and keep it going. So if all of a sudden all the sellers disappear, they've got to come in and be the sellers. If all the buyers disappear, they've got to come in and buy. That's their job. And the role is being squeezed out by technology and the tremendous volume of trading. They are becoming less and less involved in the typical market trading day. From time to time, the role of the specialists themselves, are either praised or maligned. Suffice to say that the specialists are trying to make a profit just like everybody else. While their goal may seem altruistic, you know, make sure the thing keeps working, doesn't fall apart, they make sure that when the market receives benefits from their efforts, so do they. And we use the present tense, but we really should be using the past tense because they're disappearing. There are fewer and fewer specialists working now. Now, the next group. Again, this is changing so fast that it just doesn't make any sense to even discuss them anymore. And that's the American Exchange. The American Stock Exchange, sometimes called the Amex, and also called the CURB. Huh? The CURB? Where did that name come from? Well, some old-timers will still call it the CURB. And the name came from the fact that the American Exchange started outside on the sidewalk, on the curb of the New York Stock Exchange. They were looking in the window to see what was going on, and then they'd buy and sell outside. Can you imagine? You know how cold it gets in the wintertime, how hot it gets, how hot it gets in the summertime in New York? Right. So they eventually got their own building down the street. Much smaller. Never got more than 3% of the total volume. So they were always really small. And they saw the writing on the wall 20 years ago. They started concentrating on securities other than stocks around 20 years ago. Remember the exchange-traded funds we discussed in Chapter 4? They started on the Amex. Now they're traded everywhere. But the exchange-traded... Remember the exchange-traded funds we discussed in Chapter 4? That you buy and sell on the market instead of from the mutual fund company? They started on the American Exchange 20 years ago, 1992 or so. In 1988, they were purchased by the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ then kicked them back to the curb, ha ha ha, in 2004. 2008, the New York Stock Exchange bought them. They have now changed the name to NYSE MKT. And I'm not sure if it's pronounced Mickett or Market or MKT, because no one's ever told me, and no one ever told me it didn't happen, and I didn't find out, just I found out by accident when I was looking up a stock that I knew was on the Amex, and I noticed that New York Stock Exchange, wait a minute, did they move? They're not big enough to move to New York Stock Exchange. And then I looked, New York Stock Exchange, MKT, what is this? So I go look it up. Nobody told us. I called my boss, my supervisor. He's a principal. It's called principal. It means he's a big mug. I said, did you know they changed the name? No. Didn't anybody tell you? No. In 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, this would have been a big deal. Now things are changing so fast, they don't even bother to tell the brokers. Not important. It looks as though the New York Stock Exchange, MICKET, as it's now called. I'm sorry, how do you say that? Market, probably? MKT? How would you say it? MICKET? I like MICKET. New York Stock Exchange MICKET is going bye-bye. The amazing MICKET. No, I think it's Market, but I don't know. No one's ever told me. I don't know. But they're disappearing. And then the regional exchanges were modeled after the New York Stock Exchange. Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston, Denver, Cincinnati, the Pacific Exchange. These were all centralized locations where they bought and sold securities. Many of the securities listed on the regional exchanges were also available on the New York Stock Exchange, on the NASDAQ. Traditionally, the regional exchanges were often places where undesirable or unethical issues were sold. If somebody said, oh, I bought something on the Denver Exchange, you say, okay, good luck. The Pacific Exchange was really strange. It still is. It's two places. Even though these are supposed to be centralized places, the Pacific Exchange is in L.A. and San Francisco. Figure that one out. Lately, the regional exchanges have tried to diversify and differentiate themselves from the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ in order to survive. Plus, they have not been immune to the rush to consolidate. The New York Stock Exchange bought the Pacific Exchange. The NASDAQ bought the Philadelphia Exchange. So these things are never really big. They only accounted for, at the most, 4%. And now they're being subsumed. They're being like an amoeba. They're being swallowed up.
They sell many of the same companies
on the exchanges, on the New York Amex and the NASDAQ, but they also have their own issues, and they sometimes concentrate in those issues. For example, the Philadelphia Exchange concentrates in semiconductors, you know, chip companies. That's their claim to fame now. How do the chip companies do? I don't know. Check the Philadelphia Exchange Index. So the NASDAQ bought them. So they're never really that big, and now they're smaller because they're getting eaten up. And then options and futures, which we'll discuss later on, have or traditionally had their own exchanges based in Chicago for the most part. The Chicago Board Options Exchange and the Chicago Board of Trade for Futures, those now are traded everywhere also. But these were originally started on Chicago, and this is still where the majority of options and futures are traded, but they're traded everywhere. And we'll see an options trader a futures trader.
That's speculating.
That's definitely speculating. But now when it comes to futures, as we'll see, we'll discuss later. There's a reason for futures. Options are simply gambling, folks. There's a way you can turn them into insurance, but they're mostly just gambling. Okay, so who's left? The American Exchange has basically been eaten up by the New York Stock Exchange. The regional exchanges have been eaten up a little bit by the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. But the New York Stock Exchange is the big boy, and he's being eaten up by a derivatives firm. Figure that out. And based in Atlanta. The OTC. Now, the NASDAQ is the big boy here. But NASDAQ doesn't even want you to use the words over the counter. They don't want to hear that. Because they don't want to be associated with the bulletin board or the pink sheets. Let's start from the beginning. This thing started out as widely scattered telecommunication networks through which transactions of securities were made. And when they say telecommunications, they meant telecommunications. You picked up the phone and you called Fred in Minneapolis, who dealt with this one issue that nobody knew about, this one company somewhere based in Iowa or Idaho or one of those places that starts with the letter I. And you said, hey, I got a client who wants to buy 100 shares for $5. And they said, no way, you got to pay me $6. And then they hang up the phone. No way, I'm not paying $6. They hang up the phone. They call them back 5 minutes later. I'll pay you $5.50. No way. They hang up the phone. Somebody from Atlanta would call Fred in Minneapolis. And these people, they took lessons in how to be rude. Do you understand? Yeah. Well, they don't use telephones anymore. In 1971, as we'll see, the NASDAQ came on the scene and started using the first electronic, the first computerized. And there's no one centralized location. There's no people yelling and screaming at each other, double auction. They use quotes, as we'll see. But the problem is, we still associate these two places, the bulletin boards. You might see this. You might see BB. You might see OTCBB. And the pink sheets, which are even worse. And what you'll see is PK or OTCPK. And these places are where the penny stocks live. The companies that are scams, that are not real, stay away. Every once in a while you'll see a company that's hit on hard times and it's trying to make it back or whatever, never made it to the real world, sitting on the bulletin board. But anything on the pink sheets, folks. And you know why they call them the pink sheets? Because the newspaper used to be pink. And it would have the listing of 20,000 different companies, and they distributed around the country, and people would look at each other, look at the issues, and then call up the guy in Chicago who's dealing with it and screaming at him. The role of the dealers in the OTC, as opposed to brokers on the exchanges, on the OTC we have what are called dealers. Another name for that is market makers. So both names mean the same thing. And the dealers and the market makers don't charge a commission. What they do is they make a market. They keep an inventory of certain stocks or whatever, but we're dealing with stocks. And dealers are traders who make markets by offering to buy or sell, buy and sell, we should say, certain securities at stated prices. The dealer offers buy and sell quotes from their own inventory, whereas brokers are acting as go-betweens. Hey, I got a client that's got 100 shares of McDonald's. I want to sell it. I got a client who's got 100 shares of McDonald's. I'll buy it. That's the broker. The dealer sits in the middle and buys and sells McDonald's. They have two prices, and you have to learn this. Okay, I know it's a pain in the neck. I wish it wasn't the case. But the ask price is the retail price. It's the higher price, always. That's the price that they will sell you the stock. The bid price is the wholesale price. I wish they called them retail and wholesale. Doesn't that make more sense? But the bid price is the price in which they will purchase the stock back from you. And the spread is the difference. And that's how they make their money. Does this sound familiar to anybody?
Cars.
Cars and TJ, San Isidro? Yeah, the Casas de Cambio. Unlike brokers who charge a commission, dealers make money, market makers make money, same word, same phrase, from the spread, from the difference of the bid and the ask prices. Okay, go back. Make sure you know F is retail. That's what you're going to pay. And bid is wholesale. And I know it's a pain in the neck to remember it. I like to think if you have to ask for it, then you know you're going to pay more. Does that help? I don't know if that helps. You with me? Who did I lose? Go like this. Just go like that. Got it? Yeah? What are you doing? Is she cute? Oh, no. Okay. So, unlike brokers who charge a commission, dealers make money from the spread. Just as the Casas de Cambio in San Isidro, Tijuana, make money on the difference between the prices in which they buy and sell pesos and dollars, right? The dealer's markups or markdowns are not reported to the customers, whereas the broker's commission is reported. How do you think the internet brokers make money on $5, $7 a trade, more later? So let's take a quick look at the Casas de Cambio. Does this look familiar? This is San Isidro. We're not in TJ yet. We're on this side of the border. Would you hit the lights there? Yeah, all the way down on the right side. And so what are these people doing? You walk up to them and give them a dollar. What will they do? They'll give you 12.409 pesos. But if you now want your dollar back, you got to give them 12.499 pesos. Do you understand? And you say, well, that's not fair. No. That's how they make their money. That's their job. Their job is to make money off the difference. They keep an inventory. They got to pay rent. They got to pay health care and food.
Why do they say no comisión?
Why do they say no comisión? Because they're not brokers. They're dealers. They're market makers. A broker would make money off of the commission. They would try to find you the best price, and they would make money off the commission. Whereas the dealer is going to say, look, I'm giving you a price to buy it, I'm giving you a price to sell it, and I make money off the difference. Now, all these quotes are fairly close, aren't they? The spreads are small, aren't they? In fact, a couple of them, look at that. I think that was a mistake. And every time I go there, they always come and look at me. Come on, Woody, my boss wants to know why you're taking pictures. And I say, yo soy un profesor at Southwestern Community College. Yo enseño finanzas. Y uso estas fotos para enseñar. And they go, oh, really? They don't answer me in Spanish. They answer me in English, of course. Because my Spanish is pretty bad and they know it. But these are pretty good prices, you understand? Pretty good spreads. Now, this guy across the street is charging you a whole lot more, isn't he? But he'll give you more. He's charging you 12.75, but he'll give you more for your dollar. So why wouldn't you go to here? Because not only is he charging more if you want to turn your pesos back into dollars, he also charges a commission. He's acting as a dealer and a broker. And now notice we get closer to the border. This is, if you're the pedestrian, right by the Plaza de las Americas. And this is right by the entrance now where the trolley stop is. You notice that the spreads are getting a little wider, aren't they? Because, hey, there's not as much competition. So, hey, closer to the border, it's your last chance before you cross over. But this company, this little store right here, is right now they've just changed the pedestrian crossing. It's right as you walk across. I mean, right before you walk onto the federal land and it looks like Schindler's List, walking into a concentration camp. This little store right here is Abarrotes, right? It's a, what is it? Abarrotes? How do you say it?
Abarrotes.
It's a grocery store. But they also buy and sell pesos, but look. No, there's no markup. There's no exchange rate. And no commission. And unlike many of the other places, if you give them a credit score, if you show your good credit, they don't charge you a commission on your cashing your checks. Because they make their money off of selling the grocery. So, and this is typical of Mexico, folks. In Mexico, they do not trust the banks. Many people will not do business with the banks. They want to do everything in cash, or they'll go to their stores and they trust their grocery store more. So these people are very smart. I walked in there and I said, Verdad, de veras, no hay diferencia? And she said, no, there's no difference. We charge the same. And I said, thank you very much. Muchísimas gracias. I don't know the name of it, but it's right. Mercado Internacional. Mercado International Market. It's right before you walk across. Now we're in TJ. And you'll notice that this is right by the pedestrian entrance and exit. And these are still pretty good. You know, it's a little higher, right? You see a little higher, but it's still pretty good spread. But now we're walking across, right before we go across the bridge, the pedestrian bridge, and this place has been around forever. And these people do not have the best. I mean, they're not bad. But look, cobramo comisión. You see? They're not bad rates, $385, $450, pretty small spread, but they're not only acting as a dealer, they're also acting as a broker. Are you with me?
Yeah.
And look at what they do for euros. Wow, look at that spread. You see what's going on? They'll give you 12 pesos for your euro, and a euro is about $1.30, $1.25. And they'll ask 18 pesos for your euro. And she did not like the fact that I was taking a picture. She was started waving at me, and I just stayed back. They get angry. So now we're downtown TJ. And what you'll find is that this is over on Constitution, the Second Avenue. These are pretty good spreads over here. See? Pretty close. Right? What's going on here? You see what happened? This is by Articulo 123 or 123. How do you say it? Articulo 123. First Street, which supposedly is a very dangerous street. Doesn't look dangerous to me. There's lots of nice-looking women there who are always willing to help you with your English, and they want you to come upstairs and they'll teach you some more English. Doesn't look that. It looks like very expensive English lessons. I don't recommend. But again, if you don't let them catch you taking pictures, because they start making really nasty look. But you see what they're doing here? Sure, they want you to have them 12 points. We don't charge a commission, we're dealers. We'll 12.68 pesos if you want a dollar, but we're only going to give you 12.04 pesos. So the spread is huge. And this is what happens once you get into the netherworld. When you go down to the pink sheets and the bulletin board, the spreads get huge. Sure, the stock only costs 12 cents, but when you go buy it back, they'll pay you 8 cents. And it sounds like it's like 44 cents. As a percentage of 12 cents, 4 cents is what? It's huge. It's 40%, right? It's huge. So that's how they kill you. And then some places will take your dollars. They're not in the business of buying and selling dollars, but what do? This is OXXO. That's their 7-Eleven. They'll take your dollar, but they only give you 12 pesos for it. 12.05 pesos. So, but they're not in the business of buying and selling. So what do you think? Any questions? You understand what's going on here? Exactly. We will, if you buy pesos, we'll give you 12 points.
The best way to change your dollars to a gas station in TJ?
The gas stations?
Yeah.
The Paymexes?
Yeah. And Gosmart over there.
Gosmart?
Yeah.
But do they just accept the dollars, or will they give you pesos in exchange?
Well,
it's only when you buy gas, right?
Yeah, you buy something, like, they can give you change, but...
They might give it to you in pesos. And if they have the dollars, they'll give you the dollars. Okay, please get the what? Yes?
Like, how do you find out what a special is really worth? They're buying a shopping report, but what's it really worth?
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's worth what people will pay for it and what people will, you know, sell it for. You go online and you look at the official exchange rate. That's the best price available. But do you and I get those prices? No. That's for international foreign exchanges. That's for people who've got lots of money and are buying and selling at all times.
You can walk into Chase and say, hey, I need some pesos or
something? Here, they probably won't even do it. They'll say, no, we don't deal with that. Maybe they will. It depends. If they're close by the border, yes.
Is there any government agency monitoring this, or is this under registered with Securities and Exchange Commission?
These people, I do not know. I doubt if they are registered. They probably have to have some kind of business license, obviously, but I don't know what kind of regulatory.
I think they're regulated by the Attorney General, State Attorney General.
It'll say none of these transactions are guaranteed by a bank or any other financial institution. So I don't really know who regulates them. But certainly banks are regulated, and if you go into the securities market, the Forex, as Victor talked about it, and start buying and selling these things, you're going to have to be regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, FINRA, and the like. Would you get the lights again? Well, I'm sure there's a lot of oversight. You're right. I should think about that. I should look into that. Because, obviously...
What's the minimum amount to trade in Forex?
You know, I really don't know because I don't do it. Probably they want you to come up with at least a few $1,000. We'll take your money. We know you'll lose it. No problem. Okay, so questions. You understand that? Pretty cool, huh? No? All right, well, I try my best. Anyway, now, finally, we get to the NASDAQ. The National Association of Securities Dealers, which is now a defunct organization. They don't want you to call them NASD anymore. They want you to call them NASDAQ. They created a system back in 1971 called the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System. They don't want you to remember that. They want you to know them as just the NASDAQ. They created it back in 1971. And I don't think they thought it would ever get as big as it did. They were the non-governmental organization that used to be responsible for self-regulation of registered representatives, stockbrokers, brokerages. That is now done by an organization called FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. We'll come back to them later. The NASDAQ simply wants to be referred to as the NASDAQ. They don't want you to use NASD. They don't want you to use the words over-the-counter. They provide up-to-date bid and ask prices on approximately 3,200 stocks. Now, they started in the 70s, and they used to be the place where small companies would get started. And once they became large enough, it was just expected that they would move to the New York Stock Exchange. However, in the 1980s and 1990s, some of these companies became very large. You might have heard of them. Microsoft, Intel, Apple, Oracle, Dell, Starbucks, Costco. You ever hear of some of this? Google? I don't know where Subway is. I think it's privately held. Is Subway? I'm not sure. But these companies became very large. And it was just expected that they would move to the New York Stock Exchange. And guess what happened? They didn't. They said, no, we're very happy here. And you know there were two words said at the New York Stock Exchange. The first one was O. O. What? Can you imagine? And in the 1990s, NASDAQ had some advertisements on television promoting themselves as the securities marketplace of the future. Yeah, right. In other words, the New York Stock Exchange is the past. We're the future. You understand? And now, for decades, it was New York Stock Exchange and everybody else. Now it's a two-horse race.
So say you have a small company and it just grows and grows and grows and I want to go public. I can pick NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange?
Yeah, both of them. If you're a bona fide, a real company with real earnings and make a real product and people are using you, they'll both want to talk to you. Come on. How does one pick? I guess it's a matter of preference. See who gives you the best deal. How does one pick a car? How does one pick a...
NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange pays you to...
No, you pay them. You pay them to be on their exchanges. They don't pay you. They want you. They're not in this business to make them lose money.
They're like the Google commercial. You got to pay them $1 million so they can advertise for you. And if you advertise with them, you get the more consumers to invest in your company.
And people normally want to be, if you're a seller, you want to be where the buyers are. And if you're a buyer, you want to be where the sellers are. You understand? Well, the internet and the electronic revolution has basically just flattened it. It's just flattened the whole thing. It's made it so much easier for companies based in Atlanta to become big enough to buy the New York Stock Exchange. You understand? Because it used to be all concentrated. These places were centralized locations, and the buyers and the sellers wanted to be where they both were, But now when you allow people to buy and sell anywhere around the world, do you need to be based in New York anymore? Where land is very expensive. Real estate, hang on a minute, hang on to that. So, the NASDAQ is now a three-tier system. There's the global select, global market, and the capital markets. You don't have to remember any of that because most people don't know about it. But the global select market are companies that would easily qualify for the New York Stock Exchange. So it's not the case anymore where just the biggest and the best and the most stringent and the most traditional companies are New York Stock Exchange. It's a two-horse race. And then the other two, the small cap or capital markets. As I said, they began positioning itself as a securities market of the future. As it became apparent that the traditional face-to-face double auction model was not adequate to keep up with the massive increase of trading. Now, there, as well as these guys, there were two other markets we need to take a look at real quick. The third market and the fourth market. And what these were a way for larger institutions, like mutual funds, like insurance companies, like pension plans. Because on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, and the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ, people were buying 100 shares, 50 shares, 75 shares, 200 shares, 300 shares. But when you need to buy 100,000 shares or 50,000 shares or unload 50,000 shares, you paid a much bigger transaction cost than people just buying a few shares. So the third market was created, which was where for institutional investors who trade in large blocks. They reduced the transaction cost, but it was still facilitated by a dealer. And one of the biggest examples of that was the Intermarket, which is now owned by NASDAQ. You see? A little bit of banks, but mostly mutual funds, right? If you have a mutual fund with billions of dollars, they're not going to buy 100 shares of McDonald's. They're going to buy 100,000 shares or a million shares. Are you with me?
How many shares can a company like that have?
Well, mutual fund companies are not allowed...
Like McDonald's.
Oh, well, billions.
Millions?
Billions of shares. Not typical, but hundreds of millions, billions of shares. We'll see. How much. Go look. That's part of your... That's on the key statistics. I'm sorry. Key statistics link. And then the fourth market was the same idea. Traditionally, transactions made directly between large institutional buyers. The difference between these is that they were all electronic. You bypassed the dealer. You got rid of the dealer. You didn't have to deal with the person buying and selling and the dealer in between. You just went right, like eBay, to the buyer and the seller. Anybody play on eBay? Where somebody posts something and you buy it from them and you get rid of the middleman. There's no person in between. So they changed the name to ECNs because the internet made these possible. Privately owned electronic networks that automatically match buy and sell orders that customers place electronically. So basically, we're not even going to go through these people. We're going to create our own little marketplaces where people can buy and sell securities directly to one another and not have a dealer, not have a broker. Now, don't you think that the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ got their attention, right? Because Archipelago was one of the biggies in the late 90s. It's now owned by New York Stock Exchange, and they call it the ARCA. Figure that one out. I guess they believe people can't spell Archipelago. And then another one is called BATS. You can't make this stuff up. Better Alternative Trading System. And they are based in a strip mall in Kansas City. Think about it. How much does it cost for rent in Kansas City compared to New York? Yeah, exactly. It's like a strip mall. You know what a strip mall is, right? Used to be a grocery store. Now it's an exchange that people all around the world can buy and sell. Bizarre, isn't it bizarre? It is bizarre. This is what the internet. This is what the destruction of the. Actually, they account now, I think, for about 10 or 12% of the trading, and they went public on the BATS. Uh-huh. Yeah? And when they went public, everything fell apart. their initial public offering, the trade screwed up and everything, so it was a bit of a black eye for BATS. So, are you confused yet?
Yeah, nope.
No? Well, you need to study this, right? But this is what's going on. You need to understand these. Now, do you have to know all the fine details? No, but I want you to know what these things are. And I want you to know that it's changing. And what people are going to say to you, because they're knowing that you're taking this class or you're going to start investing, and they're going to go, yay! But isn't the stock market all just one big malignant casino? Well, you have to be truthful. The answer is yes, and the answer is no. It depends. It's like any system. There are pros and there are cons. Nothing is perfect, at least nothing that we've ever created. There are many individuals who see the markets as one big crapshoot. For them, the way to riches is to buy and sell, buy and sell, buy and sell. And we call them... Everyone should say speculator. What did I say? We call them... Or... And it is very difficult. You are up against the best in the business. Neophytes become very upset when the market turns against them. But the answer is also no. Many others look at the markets as a way to participate in the growth and prosperity of the global economy. And we call them, we call you, investors. Everyone should say investors. We call you, investors. With a long-term orientation, they are usually very well rewarded, providing the world doesn't fall apart. I love this quote. I don't know if it actually belongs here, but this is from The Intelligent Investor, which is a book you're going to read eventually. We'll talk about books later on. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and an adequate return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. And this is the guy who taught Warren Buffett. He wrote a wonderful book called The Intelligent Investor, which you're eventually going to read, eventually. And at his end of his life, he honestly believed that most people should just stay away from stocks. He just argued that most people are their own worst enemies. They should stay away from stocks. I don't agree with him on that, but you're going to see that he was a very brilliant man.
Probably senile.
What? No, he wasn't senile. He just wasn't in very good health. But he in 1975, he passed away. He updated his book for the last time in 1972. So, oh yeah, Pagliano? What about Enron? Aren't corporations all crooks? Fraud and accounting, trickery and gimmicks have always been with us, folks. They will always be with us. Just assume that. Why? Because that's where the money is, right? Why do you rob banks, Mr. Sutton? That's where the money is. Normally, but not always, these firms are relegated to the nether reaches. You know what nether means? The underworld, right? Hades. Hell, whatever you want to call it, are relegated to the nether reaches of the OTC. But for every one Enron, there are hundreds, no thousands, actually, of companies that continue to do business with integrity and honesty, well, usually. For 40 years ago, it was equity funding. Ever heard of them? There's a reason why. It was an insurance company. Do insurance companies go bankrupt? No. You want to be an insurance company when you grow up. If their doors are open, they're making money. Yes, insurance company rules. They went into a room and would just make up policies, make up names, put the data in. How long was that going to last?
Forever.
Not long. No, it went bust pretty quickly. 25 years ago, it was Ivan Bosky and Vagabond Inns. Look them up. They're based here in San Diego. There's one on Broadway. Ivan Bosky was using Vagabond Inns as a front to do insider trading. He went to jail. It's a hotel. It's like a Motel 6. 4 years ago, it was Fannie Freddie, Lehman, Citi, WaMu, and AIG. And don't forget Bernie! The longest Ponzi scheme in the history of the world. 15 years. How did he keep it going for that long? I can't imagine. 20 years from now, during the next big bull market craze, somebody else is going to take their place. Which is why you need to not follow these nutcases and invest in well-run companies, and we'll talk about that later. To recap, securities marketplaces. The securities markets exist to allow investors a safe, cost-effective method to participate in the success of the global economy. And even with all the underhanded shenanigans and trucos and travesuras and hanky-panky, they have performed very well. They are changing at breakneck speed, and the change is accelerating. Whether or not we have ever had one or more global 24-hour trading markets remains to be seen. But it is exciting, and for some of us, scary to watch, especially for those of us who have a stake in the outcome. So do you think you have a bit of a handle on what's going on?
Yeah.
Yep. All right, maybe not. You're going to listen to this again. Because what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at a little video. And this is going to show you what happens when things don't go as expected.
Yeah.
Yes, it can be. Yes, thank you. Actually, one more down. One more down. That's it. All right. I'm sorry?
Terminator.
No. Much was made in 2008 when the market lost 22%, a little over 22% in 1 week. But that wasn't the worst day. The worst day was October 19th, 1987. Now, most of you weren't born yet. But the market in 1987, well, most of the people here, some of us were around. The market had gone up 40% since January, from January to August. And people were just astounded. It was a new era. Everybody's going to get rich. Everybody's buying stocks. Yeah. When you hear that, okay, it's time to go a little over to the sidelines. You know.
Is that when you want to pull your money out?
Well, I wouldn't put all of it. It depends on what your time horizon. But personally, I wouldn't put all of it out, but I would be more defensive. And we'll talk about defensive stocks later on.
Right.
Equity income, exactly. So what we're going to see is a film. It's not the best film. But it's one of the only ones out there that chronicles what's going on, what went on. And what I want you to watch is the interaction. And I'm going to try to sneak some comments in and talk about what's going on as these people scream and holler at one another. They try to be a little overly dramatic.
August 25th, 1987, the Dow Jones Industrial Average stood at 2722, the highest point in history, and experts were divided. Some said the bull market, which had begun in 1982, and more than tripled in value, was getting old. Others predicted the Dow would go higher, perhaps to 3,600. But what began in October of 1987 and continues today is a market where daily moves of 20, 50, or 100 points seem almost common. This is a new environment where markets are greatly affected by sophisticated strategies in the hands of a few high-powered players. It is a market greatly influenced by the use of futures and options. What follows is the story of the two most incredible days in financial history and a guide to investing in this new market environment.
It's called Black Monday. Market lost almost 23% one day. Futures are being sold on this in Chicago. Meaning, what do we think is going to happen in the future?
See, is probably in the lower probabilities of the outcome.
People to talk to one another. And they're using paper. I'll sell.
Generally speaking, we don't want to see interest rates.
Two and twenty. Sell. shot down one of their airliners.
By the opening bell in New York, the stage was set for the week-long drama to begin. And it began with a rush to set.
I'll accept, I'll buy. I'll accept. The specialist trying to get people to talk to one another.
By 10:30, a normal day's trading had taken place in 1 hour.
This much and such and such. I don't know what it means.
They listen to news reports, watch ticker tapes. They gather to discuss rumors and try to get through to their brokers.
Well, the dollar's dropping. They're listening to it on the news. And then at noon, it was like, oh, it's dropping, you know, so many times
before. I did not have the radio on, but I went out for lunch. And then the word started getting around about the market going south. A couple of my friends, at least one of them, sold a whole bunch of stock and took a terrible loss. And I've heard two large traders initiated Black Monday, and that they tried to unload about $4 billion worth of stock in the first half hour of trading. And that's Wells Fargo and Fidelity Investments.
Ago. That's how far behind they were. In this case, my brother.
Nobody had ever experienced a fall that dramatic. No one could comprehend it. And the wave of selling that came in was incredible. We could buy a 2 out of the S&P, which at that time was, let's say, $260,000 worth of equities, and in about a minute, it could be worth $20,000 less. So we're the biggest day of seat sales. People knew that they had probably tremendous outbreak problems. The morale was way down. There were tremendous margin calls for hundreds of millions of dollars made that day on firms.
By the time of the closing, most of the traders were just trying to play catch up. Everybody was screaming and yelling. There was much panic and confusion in the pit as to what the exact price was. The traders were trying to honor their customers' orders, but it was very difficult because at the time the customer made the order, and by the time they got into the pit, the market was moving so fast that the price would be far away from what the customer wanted to transact it at.
Thank you.
Minus 22.6% down.
I know most people by the end of the day, or no, didn't understand what was happening. This was a bigger drop than the 1929 crash. And we've never had a day like that. I don't think very many people really understood what was happening.
By the end of the day on Monday the 19th, everybody was in a panic. And we all had a sinking feeling. We were looking and saying, what's going to happen tomorrow? And we weren't sure. Because at that point, we were afraid that the panic would continue. And if the panic continued, and we saw the substantial decline the next day, at even close to the same rate as we saw on Monday, we were afraid that we would see an ultimate collapse in our markets.
What happened was, as soon as you ever saw that magnitude, in essence, everybody is flooding into cash, into the demand for cash. Securities people find themselves piling up inventories of stocks, and they need to buy those inventories from their customers with cash. So they're going to the banks, asking to borrow money on the basis of securities. When they contacted the banks, and the banks turned them down, or stalled, was money banks never do the securities firms. Suddenly, this provided a shock to the entire industry. And as the day wore on, the worry was, is will the banks step in? And if they won't step in, this panic could become much, much more dangerous.
H.B. Shane has become the first brokerage in the country to fall victim to the crash of 1987. After the company voluntarily shut itself down, regulators moved in. And tonight, a federal judge in Kalamazoo officially put H.B. Shane into receivership as a complex bankruptcy proceeding began. Tonight, officials called a news conference to assure H.B. Shane's 4,500 customers that everything is under control.
I think the fundamentals look sound. We, of course, recognize some market nervousness. It's clear to me, however, that conditions do not warrant Apocalypse Now worries or scenarios. They've cropped up now and again since this recovery began. I have said before that I thought they were unwarranted. I still think that they are unwarranted.
And this thing is coming out of Washington. All the fundamentals are sound? Wrong. A $3 trillion debt is not sound. Not having the national will to have a budget is not sound.
As brokers, traders, and exchange officials in the U.S. sorted through the wreckage and worked all night to repair the damage, as October the 19th faded into history, it was another black day for the rest of the world.
Yeah, they just closed. They said, nope, we're not going to trade. That's when people really panic, when they think they can't sell their shares.
The opening bell in New York again found the market in chaos, with specialists unable or unwilling to open trade.
People just start walking away. They just say, look, I can't buy at these prices. I can see, did you see it go from minus 20, from plus 240 to minus 240? The system couldn't keep up with it.
I'm rumors. I'm afraid to say that there is some point, but I don't know what that point is, that I would be quite anxious to talk to the New York Stock Exchange about a very temporary fall in trade.
Thank you. Now they're trying to make it real dramatic now.
For the industry was a relatively orderly day, and many people have pointed out that it was actually the next day, October 20th, that we began to see a situation develop during the late morning hours where the marketplaces collectively approached a cataclysm. And what was happening at that time was that margin calls were going on throughout the street, requesting more and more cash from the securities firms, from the specialists, and from the traders that were providing liquidity in the markets. The banks that were financing those firms and the individual traders, in many cases, were getting very, very concerned about where all this was going to lead. Rumors were floating around on our floor about some clearing organizations maybe perhaps failing. And I think it's fair to say that there was a period of time, a good hour or so, where there was almost complete panic in the marketplace.
This was the point in time that the Wall Street Journal called the most dangerous in 50 years. And this was the situation. The market had lost more than 30% of its value, $1 trillion in a week. Rumors of widespread bankruptcies in the financial industry were being reported. The Federal Reserve had promised to force cash into the system, but would it be enough or too little too late? And now the major exchanges were closing down.
The people just start walking away. It's like, I like
it. The market's broke. This time, it would be a crash far beyond Black Monday. This was the eye of the hurricane that had engulfed the world's financial markets. An eerie silence fell on the trading floors in New York and Chicago. Which way would it go? It was a moment of great danger. And then...
Now they're trying to make it dramatic. One guy did it!
The major market index, still open and trading on the Chicago Board of Trade, began buying. An individual investor was going for broke. Someone was stepping into the breach. In the next half hour, this stock index, designed to mirror the Dow, exploded upward equal to a 440-point rally on the big board. The MMI was staging the most powerful rally in its history, and probably the most significant in the last 50 years. The Dow began to respond. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange reopened at 1:15. The CBOE reopened, as did the Kansas City Board of Trade and the New York Futures Exchange. The Dow rallied up 125 points in the next 45 minutes. On the Merck S&P 500 futures rallied, then fell back. The Dow followed, down 100 points again in an agonizing free fall. Then around 2 p.m., there was a series of announcements that major corporations were going to buy back their own stock. Major U.S. companies were supporting the market.
No, they weren't.
The Dow again rallied up over.
They saw themselves as cheap and said, hey, are we going out of business? No. Buy some more stock. It's cheap.
And it was not over yet. After a very volatile week, the market fell 156 points the following Monday, and we were treated to this story.
Found though that his fourth wife, who just learned that her stockbroker husband, 39-year-old Lloyd Carlcroft, was shot, critically wounded, and taken to Baptist Hospital. But even more shocking, the office manager, 53-year-old Jose Agalagos, shot and killed. It happened before noon today at Merrill Lynch's The Falls office. 51-year-old Arthur Kane, a regular customer who had lost heavily in the market during last week's plunge, met with the two men. Witnesses say the office door was closed and the meeting quiet. Suddenly, Kane pulled out a
It happened again in 2000 and 2002. Somebody got really pissed in Atlanta. Would you turn lights back on? And went in and shot his broker and shot himself. Didn't happen. At least I didn't see it reported in 2008 and 2009. So, any questions, any thoughts?
What initially started that?
The media. There's lots of different answers depending on who you talk to. But I'll tell you this. When prices get so high that they look out of whack, what's going to happen? Somebody's going to sell, right? And when prices get too low, somebody's going to buy. It has always worked, and this is what happened in 1987. In 1987, from January to August, the market had gone up 40% in one 8-month period. And then people were looking at each other like, Peter Lynch calls it the Wile E. Coyote reaction. You know the Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote? He runs off the cliff and then stands there, and then he doesn't realize there's nothing below him. And as soon as he looks down, he goes, oh no, and then he falls. So it took about 2 months, and August, September, and October, people realized, hey, prices are too high. And then that's when it plummeted. And after the insanity, some people were going, hey, prices are now too low, and so they bought. Companies were saying, you know, they're going to each other and saying, are we going out of bankrupt? Are we going out of business? Our stock's falling 40%. No, we're doing fine, Fred. Go buy some shares. Okay. Do you understand?
Yeah. Basically, people made a lot of money and they're like, oh, let's cash out now. And everybody started cashing out at the same time.
And that's exactly what happens. When people start, we talk about this, we say, we're human. We follow the crowd, right? And I remember one of my friends who, she had this young broker at the time, and she was making a lot of money off of stocks. And we went to that Monday. Everybody was numb. Anybody alive for that? Do you remember that day? We were all numb. Most of you weren't alive. We were all numb. We were young. Not even married yet, my wife and I. We went to our friend's house. And I said, Diane, you didn't sell today, did you? She said, yeah. I broke. She said, no. She said, I hung on. She should have bought. That's the day you buy. Of course, it's very difficult, right? You see all these people running that way. You're going to run that way. The best thing to do is just get a, you know. There's no tiger, hopefully. Yes, Victor?
Would you recommend, like, selling, like, not all your bonds, but just a small percentage of it?
Well, it depends on the individual. But for you young folks, if you have some more money, buy some more. But for most of us grunts, we're going to be putting $50, $100 away every month or every paycheck or whatever. Just realize that, yeah, your $10,000 is now $7,000. But you're going to keep putting in $50 and you're going to be buying shares at a low price and you're not going to touch it for 30 years. But if you're a trader, if you're a speculator, you've got to get in there and joust and scream and holler and yell. Now, they don't do it anymore. It's all electronic. But you've got to get in there and try to get out before the other people get out and get back in before the other people get in. And did you see? Exactly. Did you see the thing jumping up and down? We talk about 2008, but what people don't realize, in late 2008, when the organic matter hit the Ventolin device, there were 2 days when the market went up over 10% in one day. While it was falling 50%, there were 2 days when it jumped back up over 10%. Now think about it. If you jump out the day before it went up 10%, and then jump back in the next day, it went 5 down 5 or whatever, and then did that twice, you've now destroyed about 4 years' worth of earnings. You understand? Of course, if you were smart enough to do it, you know, get out, you know, before it fell, get back in before it went up 10%, get out, and then get back in before it went up 10%, congratulations, because you now made 4 or 5 years' worth of earnings in 2 days. But I'm not going to try. I mean, if you want to try to go right ahead. Okay, so what do you got to do?
Study,
folks. You've got to do it. It's, you know, I wish I could open up your brain, pour it in. It doesn't work that way. You've got to know these things. You've got to know these things. And when we come back on Tuesday, we're going to do this.
Scream and yell
at each other. We're going to be brokers buying and selling the stocks. What? Hand signs at one another, yeah. Okay, so see you next Tuesday. Who snuck in late? See you next Tuesday.